Welcome to the Solve Crimes with Rick and Gavin podcast. We present cold case crimes that we feel can and should be solved with your help. We provide the facts of the case and the research that we have done, then web sleuths like you help us solve the mystery and provide the victim, family, community, and law enforcement with justice and peace of mind. This is Solve Crimes. Welcome to Solve Crimes with Rick and Gavin. I am Rick.
I am Gavin. Good to be here.
And there you go. So, Gavin, we've been teasing some new cases that we've been working on that we were pretty much unable at that time to speak much about, but we're about ready to go after this one case that we're going to discuss today.
Yeah, we are. We've gotten a lot of information on it. We've collected a lot. There's still a lot that we need to collect on it. Mm-hmm. This is a crazy case out of Northern California that we probably shouldn't disclose how we became aware of this case, but we are aware of it, and it is on nobody's radar.
That's right. It's a case from 2015. And amazingly, I mean, there are quite a few people who know about this case, but it's never been presented to the public in any fashion, not newspaper, not radio, not mainstream media whatsoever.
Which is a shame because this is one that is stalled. The investigation is stalled, and we'll get into some of the reasons why.
Right.
And I think it's going to need a little public outcry in order to push it to its ultimate conclusion, and I think that we feel like we know what that conclusion is going to be.
Yes. And we also feel that we can do that.
Yeah.
Otherwise, we wouldn't have taken it on. I mean, it is a multi-layered man. It's an incredibly layered story, and it's definitely something that I think we can move the needle on, and it's just a matter of, like you said, it's just a matter of bringing it out in the light. I mean, which is very similar to what we've been talking about the last week with the Kristen Smart case that was finally, they finally made two arrests last week. So because of a podcast that kind of brought it back out into the light. I mean, the podcast didn't solve it, but it got everybody moving again.
Well, and it brought up witnesses that had never been questioned by police, which gave them what they needed in order to move forward. What's different about that case, the Kristen Smart case, to this case, is that police continued to investigate the Kristen Smart case, even though it was almost 24 years from the time she went missing to the time that the lead suspect was arrested was almost 25 years. In this case, it just seems completely dead in the water. Nobody's doing anything.
Yeah. Yeah. And so we're, and like the Kristen Smart case, we do hope that our bringing it out will also bring forward some either, I don't know if we have witnesses, but we'll certainly have witnesses to the time period. And hopefully some people will have some knowledge that will help us.
Yeah, we'll dig it out. Now, maybe we should just go ahead and get into it. Without saying who gave us this case, let's just say the first article that we found on this case was from kind of a podunk little one-man operation blog. And I'm not putting him down because he did a good article here. But it wasn't like in a major paper. The closest paper to this would be the Sacramento Bee, probably, right? The closest major paper.
Major paper, yeah, but there was a daily paper there.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I think we can say this happened This case originated in Yuba City, California, which is west of Sacramento.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sister city, because they're separated by a little bridge, is Marysville, California. And it's a very rural area.
So the article we found is titled "Sarah's Blood Cries Out." That caught our attention pretty quickly there.
Yeah.
So why don't you tell us maybe the major tenets of the case as we know them, Rick?
Yeah, I mean, I can say that someone that I know was aware that you and I were doing our YouTube channel and our podcast, and they said, "Hey, you should really look into this case." So you and I got on the phone and we hopped on our browsers, as we do, and mm-hmm. And we started looking into it, and yeah, that one article came up. Now, the thing about that article, like you said, it's not a mainstream media article, so it is not technically based on facts. You know what I mean?
Yeah, there's probably facts in there, but
there are.
He didn't go through the journalistic process of having, exactly, you know, multiple sources and all that stuff. But right. He being, I guess, you know, he lives in that area, and mm-hmm. he has a voice with his podcast and with his blog. So mm-hmm. he wrote it, and you know, yeah. I think that's kind of, at least in the beginning, that has been our process. Anytime we find out about the case, Rick mm-hmm. and I kind of dig to see what we can find that's already been written. And that's where we start.
Yeah, for sure. It's a good place to start. And then you can kind of go down the list and see what you can verify.
Yeah.
So people are probably sitting here going, tell us the story. Okay. So, and we do, you know, we are going to be very careful about how we tell this story, because we have our own prejudices, you know, from what we've seen and what we've heard and that kind of thing. But we also have to be cognizant that you know, there are people involved. This is a fairly new case, like we said, 2015, compared to some of the other cases we've worked on. So this all started in August of 2015, As you said, the victim here is Sarah Matthews Easton, and so Sarah had and her husband at the time, Aaron, they had three children at home, and they lived in Yuba City. So they had gone out. I don't know if it was a scheduled thing, but they had gone out to dinner to celebrate Sarah's birthday a few days prior to her birthday. They had gone out on the night of the 15th.
Yeah, I was going to interrupt with something that's weird about why they did that. It mm-hmm. was scheduled, but we can get into that later.
Okay. So so they went out on the night of the 15th. They came over to Sacramento, to Old Sacramento, which is right on the river, and they went to Joe's Crab Shack, which is a place people like to go to celebrate birthdays and that kind of thing. So they got back later that night, and at some point after midnight, in the, you know, early morning hours of the 16th, the one thing that is factual is that Sarah was shot in the head.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, according to her husband, Aaron, she shot herself. Correct?
That's correct. As we understand it.
Yes.
He said that she shot herself.
Right. So we naturally started doing our own digging, because the rumors that we heard, and that's really all they are without fact, right? The rumors that we heard was that she was shot in the head more than once. Mm-hmm. So we dug into that, and we actually had a source, a very reliable source that will not be named for many reasons, that she was indeed shot twice on the left side of her head, and Sarah was right-handed.
Which doesn't automatically mean...
Not that's impossible.
Mean, yeah.
Right, exactly. Not impossible. But what if, you know, you're more of a gun guy than I am. So what we also found out was that Sarah had... So Aaron at the time was the chief of police for the Marysville Police Department, the
which
next town
the
over.
They sister lived, city.
That's right. They lived in Yuba City. So... We did verify that she was shot with his service pistol.
Correct.
Okay. And so we have not verified the exact model of that pistol, but you have the stuff that you looked into.
Yeah. In California, most police organizations, law enforcement agencies select from the same group of guns. They tend to be either 9mm or 40 caliber weapons. Sometimes, though, police chiefs are extended courtesies that the rank and file police don't get to use. So I'm aware of some police chiefs that while the gun isn't on the list of approved weapons, they still have like a Colt 1911 45 caliber mm-hmm. gun, right? Mm-hmm. But what we believe, the most prolific gun used by law enforcement throughout California is 9mm, mostly because the ammunition is much cheaper, and in comparison to a 40 caliber, it's roughly the same stopping power, right? So we believe right. that Aaron Easton's service pistol was a 9mm, but we don't know.
And we've also been told by several people that knew him very well that he was not what I guess some people would consider a gun nut. So the odds of him having some special gun that he wanted to carry doesn't sound like that would have
really
been the case.
Sound like him. Right. What's really kind of funny about that is that every cop that I know, and it's not like I know tons, but I'm more than 10. I know more than 10 cops. Okay.
Okay.
They are all that quote unquote gun nut type. It's a tool of their trade. Mm-hmm. And so they're enthusiastic about sidearms. Right. Aaron was not that way. So right. that tells me that he was more of an administrator than he was like an enforcer. It's like he was on the track of being an administrator. He wanted to be mm-hmm. a pencil pusher, a desk jockey.
Well, he was a pretty young guy to be a police chief. So it does seem like that was his.
Yeah, he wanted
to achieve that.
Few years older than Sarah, and Sarah died when she was 32. So
she was actually 2 days shy of 32.
Right.
I keep pointing that out to everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he was 35 or 36, and we know this because there's a strange story about how we know his age. But anyway, mm-hmm. she shot herself, or according to him, she shot herself with his service pistol, which we believe is a 9mm.
And the next thing out of my mouth is really the crux of this entire case and this entire investigation. And the one thing that is upsetting most everybody who knows about this case, it is still an undetermined death. So the manner of death is unknown because it has not been officially stated. The cause of death, we know, bullets to the head, we got it.
Yeah.
But her family still does not have a final determination from law enforcement, and we still haven't wrapped our brain around that because it's considered an open investigation. We did get confirmation on that, but there's zero movement on me. I mean, this all happened in one room. You know, in 2015, how long do you need? You know.
Yeah, I mean, well, there are more complications to this case that maybe we should introduce folks to as well.
Okay.
Go for it.
Okay. So there, and I'll make sure to note when there are things that we know for sure and things that we don't. So the thing we do know for sure is that she had the two bullets and it was on the left side of her head and it was with his with Aaron's service pistol. The other stuff is a little gray as far as when phone calls were made, who they were made to. You know, we don't know. I mean, I would love to get our hands on the cell records. Yeah, that would, you know, fill in a lot of the blanks that we would love to fill in. But so essentially what we were told is that at some point the Yuba City Police Department shows up. And from what we heard, Mr. Easton required a search warrant for them to enter the home. And I mean, you know, it's in his wheelhouse. And so he knew to
and he's
ask
a police chief.
That.
They're coming up to the neighboring city's police That's chief's right. house.
That's
They're
right.
They're not so going to bang down the door.
Right. So it's obviously got to treat this with kid gloves and make sure everything is done properly for obvious reasons. So from what we understand, the Yuba City Police Department contacted the Sutter County District Attorney's Office to ask for a warrant to enter the home and investigate. And so there's a lot of speculation, and I don't think we're going to go into it in this podcast, but basically Sutter County District Attorney recused themselves from any kind of involvement in this case because the district attorney at that time and the current district attorney, Amanda Hopper, had, I will just say, a relationship with Aaron Easton. We've heard a very intimate relationship all the way through to, at the very least, Amanda Hopper was married to Brian Hopper, who was a former partner of Aaron Easton when they were with the Yuba County Sheriff's Department. They were also next door neighbors at one point. So that was enough for them to recuse themselves for obvious reasons. So Yuba City Police went to the next county over, and I believe that was Yuba. And when they called them for a warrant, Yuba County also had to recuse themselves because Amanda Hopper's father was also a district attorney in that county. So
was
it goes
he the
all
district attorney, or was he like an assistant DA?
Yeah, he was an assistant DA. I don't think he was.
So he
the
worked
DA.
In the office. Yeah,
he worked in the office there. So obviously, there's the conflict of interest continued on over. So they ended up having to go to a third county to get a warrant. And again, we don't know the exact timing of all this, but at some point, Yuba City Police Department, and I think it was at the time a good decision, called the California State Department of Justice to come in and assist on the case. And again, without knowing all the details, they either asked them to take it over or the Department of Justice came in and it was determined that they should take it over, right?
Right.
So that is how it got to where it's in the hands of the Department of Justice. They are the lead.
Now, all of that that you just described happened after Sarah was taken to the hospital. You know, during this whole process, she wasn't lying on the floor.
Right.
She had been taken to the hospital, and she actually died at the hospital.
Yes. And again, we wish we knew the timing of everything because it would certainly help.
We're still trying to figure that out.
We're still trying to figure it out, but yeah. So she did die at the hospital. Her family was called, and they went over there. So essentially, we do know that Yuba City PD did assist in the investigation. They were first on the scene. They did enter the property before the Department of Justice. And from what we understand, the Department of Justice came in later that morning of the 16th, after she had expired. And I believe they were in the home 12 to 14 hours investigating, I guess. So where things are now is that according to the Department of Justice, it is an open case. I did get confirmation on that.
Yeah, we did get confirmation.
I contacted them, and that is all they'll say. So they basically are saying that any open investigation, they cannot comment on.
You know what's interesting about this, Rick? You and I, as you know, we're doing cases all over the United States, not just mm-hmm. the ones that have been published so far on our YouTube right. channel or on the podcast. We're right. working in multiple jurisdictions, and in some jurisdictions we will call and they will gladly talk to us. We will talk to the detective in charge. He yep. will or she will read us documents. It will share crime scene photos.
They'll say to us, "What do you need? I'll get it."
Yeah. But California, man, California is a different story. So basically, the California Public Records Act has this giant gaping loophole in it. Mm. So basically, the Freedom of Information Act requires that public information be released. But in the state of California, they wrote in to the Public Records Act this loophole that says, except in cases where we believe that the public good is better served by not releasing information.
Or that it would be detrimental to the investigation.
Yeah. Now, most jurisdictions say that. Like, if it's detrimental to the case, we're not going to release it. And you know what, Rick? I'm totally cool with that because that means that they're trying to do something. But in California, they're like, unless the public is better served by not getting documents out
into
the
public. And that is determined by the law enforcement agency.
That is correct.
which means, and we're not claiming that there's something corrupt going on. We're not. What we are claiming is that there's something going on.
Yes. Right?
I mean, we've discussed this case with attorneys, with former prosecutors. We've discussed this case with law enforcement, you know, retired law enforcement, journalists. I mean, we've really done our research on this, and we just cannot find any reason that it would take 5.5 years and still no closure for the family. You know, the family got a death certificate and it was redacted.
The manner of death was redacted. So typically when a medical examiner or coroner's office determines the cause and manner of death, there are only a few choices. It is undetermined, under investigation, suicide, accident, homicide. Mm-hmm. And then there's one that is basically natural causes, right?
Right.
So typically under investigation only is checked off if like they issue a death certificate prior to determining. Yeah. Correct. And then it'll be updated. So there are really only five choices.
Go ahead and tick off the ones that this one can't be.
Yeah. So it cannot be natural causes. It cannot be under investigation because the autopsy was performed. So it either is an accident.
I don't even think you can call suicide, it that, but I guess.
Or a homicide. Yeah. Those are the three things. But if it were a suicide, it would just be ruled a suicide.
Correct.
So if it were an accident, it would just be ruled an accident, right? So I'm getting to where you already got. Took more words. So
yes,
they've basically redacted homicide.
Or they hadn't filled it out and it's just redacted because there's nothing there.
Well, that would be under investigation.
Well, yeah.
Because there has to be a manner of death. If they issue a death certificate, there has to be a manner of death. So either it's undetermined, under investigation, or homicide. But I don't know that they would. Under investigation only happens prior to the cause of death being determined something else.
Correct.
They would not redact natural causes. They would not redact accident. They would not redact suicide. They've redacted homicide.
So that brings up one of the first "are you kidding me" moments. And there are a lot of them in this case. So I will preface this with, this is a theory that others have had, and we are going to repeat that. Okay. Just a theory. And it's really people in certain circles in the Yuba City, Marysville area know the details of the stuff that we're discussing right now. This quite literally is one of the first times it's been out there. So at the time that this case happened, at the time of her death, and when the Department of Justice came in, if people don't know, the Department of Justice is headed by the state's top cop, which is the Attorney General, right?
Mm-hmm.
Who at that time of Sarah's death was Kamala Harris, our current Vice President of the United States.
Correct.
The rumors that we heard, or the guesses that we've heard from people who were involved in this case in some form or another at the time, is that the assumption or the guess was that at the time of Sarah's death, that Kamala Harris was either just starting or was involved in a political campaign running for a Senate seat, which she ended up winning, as we know. So the rumors are that it was possibly too hot of a case, having a cop, you know, potentially a cop killing his wife kind of a story, wouldn't look good for her in a Senate run. And so it got shelved, and then no one wants to be the one that brings that up.
By the way, sorry about that. One of the, if you look at the timing of that, so again, this isn't our theory. This is the theory that other people have put out to us, that Kamala Harris, as the Attorney General, just wasn't interested in prosecuting a cop in the middle of her Senate campaign. This was August of 2015. Kamala Harris was elected in the 2016 election cycle. She took office. Mm-hmm. She took Barbara Boxer's Senate seat in January of 2017. So the timeline matches, right? She was in campaign mode in the state of California. Now, I'm not like casting shadows on Kamala Harris, because she may not have ever even known about this case. Could be a handler or somebody in another
level. Wasn't like a giant O.J. Simpson kind of a case. You know, Aaron Easton was a chief of police, but of a very tiny police department. He was not a political powerhouse. You know what I mean? Yeah. I mean, that was one of the first things that I said when we were looking into this and we heard that part, was that, I mean, there are multiple numbers of people and levels and departments that would have filtered that before it got to her desk. So it's very possible that she has never heard of this case then or now, right? So that's certainly possible, right? But it is one of those things that, you know, it's like, you know,
it's also possible that it went right up the chain going, oh, holy crap, we've got a police chief in Northern California who it looks like he killed his wife.
And I don't want to start a campaign being the top cop and having cops under me killing people, right?
I just convicted a cop, or I accused a cop, mm-hmm. and now none of the police associations or anything will endorse mm-hmm. me because I am
going after
on
a cop.
Cops. Yeah.
Yes. And it could be anywhere in between those two
extremes,
areas, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but it is, again, like I said, it's one of those, you know, we're stating basically the facts, and we are also stating, you know, what the rumors are, what the possibilities are. But it is one of those things that, you know, and guess who the Attorney General was, you know, it's just like these hits, you know, so that is the crux of the case. There's so much more here, but
the word suicide never showed up anywhere.
No.
Except Aaron threw a benefit of some sort showcasing Sarah's artwork. And in the newspaper report, it said she died of apparent suicide.
Well, it was implied, because the benefit, according to Aaron Easton, was for in Sarah's name, and the benefit was the funds were going to a suicide prevention organization, and here's the thing, we are actually working on behalf of Sarah's family. So we are in contact with her brothers and her friends and that sort of thing. And so we are investigating this and hopefully coming to some conclusion that will satisfy the family and give them some closure on this. I mean, they already know that, you know, they've lost Sarah, but this unknown question mark of how, you know, how she died or who was responsible is still kind of hanging over them. So knowing that, we do know that the family was not happy about the article coming out and implying that she committed suicide, when in fact there is no official record saying that. It's only come from Aaron Easton. Now,
you know, and when we've talked to the brothers independently, both of them said, hey, listen, if the autopsy was done and the medical examiner determined that Sarah committed suicide, I'm okay with that.
Yes, they said they would accept that. And I think that's really big of them. You know, they're not tunnel visioned. So they're not after.
But the fact is, they have not been able to see the autopsy report. And when they got her death certificate, her manner of death was redacted. So there's just suspicion all over this thing.
Yes. So they were upset naturally, because of the implications that she had committed suicide. Because prior to that, because I think that benefit was quite a while later. I think it was the following year after Sarah's death. So prior to that, the local daily newspaper there had not written anything in detail about Sarah's death other than Marysville police chief Aaron Easton's wife tragically passed away in her home.
Yeah.
That's it. There was no speculation. There was no details on how. We have since learned, and we're also not going to divulge how, but we have since learned that the newspaper is, I mean, again, this is a very rural area. And as you can imagine, writing an article in a small town about the possibility, even if they wrote it with all the journalistic integrity that they could muster, and keeping it even the speculation that the local police chief might have murdered his wife and covered it up as a suicide would be a pretty big scandal in this community. So the newspaper decided not to even bring it up, which is, in my opinion, the reason why it has been stagnant all these years and that it never made it out of the town, of that little community. So they refused to. In fact, we also know that the newspaper reporter who covered that that story about the art auction for Sarah and it going to suicide prevention, we happen to know that reporter had actually put in the article nothing blasphemous, just saying, you know, this benefit was for suicide prevention, even though the manner of death for Sarah Easton has not been officially determined, and it was taken out of the article and published without it
by the editor. We also know that an employee of that newspaper is now Aaron Easton's wife.
Yes, she was in an advertising department.
Yeah, so she wasn't a reporter.
Right, she wasn't involved in the editorial stuff,
but it's, yes, a small paper, Rick.
It's not like there are multiple
floors of journalists in like these, you know, desks all over the place. It's like this tiny little paper that has a few employees, and it's like everybody knows each other.
Aaron
was at least after the death of Sarah Easton had a relationship with an employee at that newspaper. And actually, no, I can say factually, they had a relationship before that because they were on a board together.
Yeah.
So there's that.
And we have reliable sources that they had a relationship prior. We don't, you know, obviously we can't prove how deep it went, but you know, you can kind of tell, though, I'm being very careful how I tell this story,
because
until we have facts, yeah, we should. I mean, we definitely want to have our own integrity, and we don't want to, you know, we just don't want to go down that road. But this story needs to be told. And again, and I mean, we definitely feel that if it is determined by the Department of Justice that it was suicide, and they, you know, they don't just willy-nilly spit that out, and they actually have, you know,
they release the autopsy and all that.
That explains it. Yeah. Then we're okay. Great. But the fact that, I mean, the biggest thing is that it's a tragedy that something like this is just, it'll be an open case in, you know, basically forever unless someone does something. And the family has reached out to the Department of Justice, and they were told unofficially, I think they were told over the phone, not in writing, that until some new evidence comes out, this is going to be an open cold case.
So that's our mission.
Our mission is to call their bluff, because I think there's plenty of evidence, right? Mm-hmm. To make the determination is what I mean. I'm not saying what the determination would be, but I think there's plenty of evidence, enough for a determination.
You know what some people might be asking, Rick, is Aaron Easton, who you know, is alleged by some, not by us, mm-hmm. to have killed his wife and gotten away with it.
Yep.
What is he doing these days?
Well, a couple of things we can say that leads up to where he is these days. These are facts, right? So Aaron Easton has I believe a record of accusations of sexual impropriety. Okay.
That was very political of you. Very well done. Good job.
Wasn't that nice?
That was good.
I thought I did a good job. So one of those cases or one of those incidences or one of those accusations, all of the above, caused, I believe, a prosecutor to approach Mr. Easton about a little over 2 years after Sarah's death. I believe it was 2017. Essentially, I'm just going to paraphrase because I don't have the details in front of me, but essentially, he was told that there was an accuser, and it was in the paper. So it was the accuser was a former cadet at Yuba County Community College has a police academy there, and Aaron Easton was an instructor, and so this cadet accused him of sexual. Basically, he put the moves on her, and she felt pressured, and so she gave in, and so she laid this accusation out, and I, from what we understand, the prosecutor kind of gave Aaron Easton, he said, resign and get out of town, or we're going to prosecute this, and so he did that. He resigned from his post. He claimed he was innocent, but he did resign from his post, and he moved back to where I believe he was born, around the Oklahoma City.
He at least lived there before,
Yes,
if he was,
yeah, a couple times,
whether
yeah.
he was born
family
there,
right? So that is where he is now.
So he's and no yes, longer the police chief of Marysville, California.
He is no longer in law enforcement at all.
Yeah,
and we do have factual information on that as well, and so. This area, this Yuba City Marysville area, has a lot of stuff that's gone on there, that could look like corruptness. It could look like, political stuff. But from everything we've gathered, it's just, like you said, podunk. It's just small town stuff, right?
Right.
And all those things that go along with it. So, which we'll get into as we unfold this case. We're trying to give everybody the super brief overview of this thing, and it's almost impossible, wouldn't you say?
It is. Yeah, we're like, what are we, 40 minutes into this? Yeah.
So. Oh yeah, we haven't even scratched the surface. Yeah,
35.
So, yeah.
So that is I think that's a pretty good summary of this case. Now, mm-hmm. If you subscribe to our YouTube channel, you'll know that we've done series on a couple of different cases, and Sarah Matthews Easton is going to be another series. It'll be many parts because there's just so much to uncover, and we have uncovered quite a lot already, but we are going through the process of getting more and more information through witnesses and through documents that we have been able to unearth and get past the whole giant gaping loophole.
And this is an exclusive case for us. As far as the family is concerned, we've done multiple interviews. We're going to be doing a couple more. We've done interviews with people who were very close with Sarah, that type of thing. And so, and we're also trying to be respectful of, not only Aaron, because let's face it, and we should have put this out there earlier, that, everyone involved in this is innocent until they are proven guilty in a court of law. No one that it has not happened, right? It hasn't even gone to court. There's not even been any official anything.
There's no proof that she didn't criminology. Commit suicide.
Exactly. Yeah, so we just want to make sure. But we also want to be sensitive to Sarah's children, which a couple of them do live in the area. And so we're being respectful in that regard too. We're working with the family to, make sure that that we're careful there. So we're going to be putting this, unfolding this thing as we go and as we gather information, and we'll have exclusive interviews and documents and and things of that nature. And
we'll get those posted on our website, solvecrimes.tv. Yep. This is another one of those cases, Rick, as you know, that is causing us to work full time for a job that we don't get paid for, in addition to the full time jobs that we do get paid for.
Exactly.
So if you're listening to this and you, you're interested in this case and you want to support us, you can go to solvecrimes.tv or you can go to our YouTube channel, just search Solve Crimes with Rick and Gavin, and there are links to our Patreon account, or you can, there are t-shirts and other merch for sale, and those little onesie twosie sales that we get in once in a while really help us. So, yes. And if you can't, support us monetarily, we also love you and thank you. Just, watch our YouTube videos and subscribe. Keep listening to our podcast. That helps too.
Yes. Now, before we go, I do want to point out that this is an active investigation for us as well, not just the Department of Justice. So if you know anything about this case, even if you just happen to know Sarah or know Aaron or know someone involved or you remember this happening, you know, you never know. One of those little teeny things could be could really open some doors for us in this investigation. And honestly, the family really appreciates everything that we're doing and everything that anyone who reaches out to help, it really is important. So if you do know anything, you can stay anonymous, not a problem. We do not need to disclose who you are or anything about you. We can even do audio and or video interviews and alter your voice and, you know, disguise your likeness. So go to solvecrimes.tv and we have a form there. You'll see contact us at the top of the page, and there's a form there, and you can say that you want to stay anonymous, and that form only goes to Gavin and I. It doesn't go to anywhere else, and we will respect whatever your wishes are, but we really would like to talk to anyone who has insight.
You know, would say what would be interesting to me is to try to create a kind of a vignette of who Aaron Easton is. So far, we have a pretty good idea of who Sarah was because we're in touch with her family and some of her closest friends. If you knew Aaron, like when he was a kid or in high school, and want to tell us about that so that we can create.
Yeah, we're not just
vignette.
Looking for dirt.
Yeah, that's correct. Or if you worked at the Marysville PD or were in the academy with him, we'd really love to know more about him. So.
Yep.
Find that clue tip form on our website, and you can stay anonymous even on the website. You don't need to tell us your contact information, anything. You can just, I mean, we wish you would.
We'd like your contact info because we'd like to be able to, you know, to do a follow-up with some questions, but we promise we will not divulge or give out your information to anyone if that's what your wish is. So I think that's a good place to stop, and we'll be rolling this stuff out as we get it. And we do thank the Matthews family, by the way, for being so great throughout this. And they continue to, they've really been helpful and really want justice.
It's a painful position to be in that they have to be the ones that are pushing this. Right.
Yeah.
So we do appreciate not only, we appreciate not only the help that they're giving us and the access that they're giving us, but just the fact that they're working so hard on behalf of their sister and aunt and daughter. Mm-hmm. We really appreciate it.
Yep. Okay. Sounds good. Good place to stop. We will talk at you soon.
All right. Take care, guys. See you, Rick.
Okay. Thanks. Thanks for listening to the Solve Crimes with Rick and Gavin podcast. Please subscribe to keep up to date with the cases that we feature. Also, please subscribe to our YouTube channel, Solve Crimes with Rick and Gavin, and you can find us on virtually all social media. You can find out more information about our channel and the things that we're up to by visiting our website, solvecrimes.tv.